This episode is brought to you by Podcash, a collaboration between Racket and Stir. Podcash is free cash for your podcast. Podcash gave away $100,000 to up-and-coming podcasters as a way to support insanely creative and inspiring podcasters. I ought to know because I'm one of those podcasters that received a winning cash sum. I know how difficult it can be to get a podcast off the ground, and this is why I'm so excited to have been a Podcash winner. I would have gone nuts for something like this when I was first starting out. If podcasting has been on your to-do list or you're already a podcaster, go to podcash.com to stay up to date with future Podcash happenings. That's podcash.com. And I thank all who voted for me and made me a Podcash winner. That's podcash.com. I am Al Cooley from Ghosts in the Valley Podcast.
This is Warren Ajous, author of Evidence of Extraterrestrials. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley Podcast.
This is Kel Weberson, book author and team owner of Paranormal Investigations of Oklahoma. You are now listening to Ghosts in the Valley Podcast.
And I am Al Cooley, host of Ghosts in the Valley Podcast. I'm Al Cooley, host of Ghost in the Valley Podcast. Today I have Ashley Hilt, who also goes by Ashers. Ashers is a podcast host, a ufologist, a paranormal investigator, a cryptozoologist, and she is currently filming a documentary, and she is the host of Monster Radio on YouTube. And I'll be right back with my conversation with Ashers right after these brief messages.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
Okay, today I have Ashley Hilt, is a podcast host, a ufologist, a Fortean investigator, a cryptozoologist. She's also writing a book. She also has Monster Radio, which is available on YouTube. And she's also currently working on a film documentary. Wow.
That's a mouthful, right?
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And we're both from the weird and wacky state of Ohio.
Gotta love it here.
Let's start from the beginning. I mean, where it all began. Mm-hmm. What got you interested into the paranormal?
Well, that's easy. I got into it. I remember I was probably around 11 years old at the time. And I was in middle school and we used to read these copies of kind of small versions of like Time magazine that we used to get weekly at the school. And there was an article that had come out, and it was big news that the Patterson-Gimlin film with, you know, the famous Bigfoot walking, everybody, I'm sure everybody's seen, that it was faked. It was a proven hoax. And I didn't really understand what was being talked about. So later that night, I went home and I jumped on the old dial-up internet. And it took me probably about 24 to 48 hours to download the entirety of the Patterson film. And when I did, and I watched it, I couldn't believe what I'm seeing. I was so shocked. I was like, how does anybody think that that's fake? But you know, of course, it was saying, oh, well, this was fake. You know, they admitted it. They were saying that Patterson had admitted it on his deathbed. I believe what was actually going on at the time was Bob Hieronymus had come out and said that he wore the Patty suit and things like that. But, you know, I started looking more into Bigfoot. And then, of course, it took me down a road of all these strange creatures. I mean, my next one was the Loch Ness Monster. And there was a website we had available at school at the time. The internet was super new. I'm 30. I was born in 91. So I grew up with the transition of technology. And, you know, but we had a keyboarding class. And when we were done with our assignment, we'd be able to peruse this very specific website. And on that website, it just had all the heavy hitters of basic things. You know, it had Bigfoot and Nessie, and it had Chupacabra, and it had ghosts and, you know, aliens. But just maybe you got like a paragraph worth of what it was. And that was really it. So then I started searching the internet for just spooky things, other spooky things. And, you know, at that point in time, I would come across all kinds of fun media, all kinds, probably millions of pictures of orbs, you know, ghostly apparitions. And then it just kind of kickstarted this lifelong love that I had for the weird. And, you know, I'd go to the local libraries, check out the books, discover new websites as I grew up. And but I didn't start doing this actually until about 2 years ago, when I started working on this documentary, and that's when life kind of took a weird turn and I started doing it full time. So that's the long and short.
Did you have any paranormal experiences growing up as a child or teenage years?
I didn't really have any as a young child. Once I got into my teens, you know, I was kind of a an unruly kid. You know, I liked to party. And, but one thing we would do is, you know, we'd get together as a group of friends and we would go out to these spooky places. I had a copy of Weird Ohio, the book. And we would kind of go visit these places in the book and be like, oh, let's go catch some ghosts. You know, we've had weird things happen, but never anything that was like, oh, that was definitely, you know, something. My first really jarring experience that I had, I was 18 and I was sitting outside of my parents' home. It was probably like 3 o'clock in the morning. I was a smoker, so I was outside smoking because, again, I was unruly. While I'm sitting out there, all of a sudden, in the sky, I saw these huge, it looked like headlights, and they were kind of moving slow and they were kind of wobbling back and forth a little bit and just kind of getting closer and closer to where I was. Now, I was very familiar, you know, with the concept of aliens at the time. But, you know, I'm honestly kind of terrified of them. I always kind of have been, and I don't really know why. And so I was like, oh, that's scary. I'm going inside. I went inside. I immediately started looking through, you know, over the next couple of days, looking through other UFO sightings in the area. And it wasn't an isolated incident. Other people had seen the same thing that I saw that night. That was probably the first time that happened. Well, that wasn't the only thing that happened. You know, so I reported that sighting. Actually, I found an ad at the time on Craigslist. And it was a really strange ad. It was allegedly from a film student going to school at Wright State University who was looking for people that have seen UFOs. They were making this movie for you know, their film class or whatever. So I got together with that person. We met at a coffee shop. I shared my uneventful experience of headlights. That wasn't the weird part. The weird part was probably about, I'd say about 3 to 5 years later, I can't pinpoint exactly when, I was on Craigslist again and I came across the same ad and it was verbatim. I'm making a film for my film class. I'm trying to find people that have UFO experiences. If you have one, reach out to me, blah, blah, blah. I didn't reach out to him, but I did think it was really, really weird. And, you know, and then that's kind of the start of this lifelong, you know, kickoff of these instances of high strangeness that I've experienced.
You have on here that you were a Fortean investigator. Mm-hmm. Explain to my listeners, I mean, differences between a Fortean investigator and a paranormal investigator.
Sure. No, that's a really good question. So it's actually, every time I give a presentation, that's the slide that's in there. What the heck does that mean? So Fortean is a word derived from researcher and author Charles Fort. If you're into these kinds of topics and you don't know who Charles Fort is, I can't encourage you enough to go seek out works from this man. Charles Fort wrote about all kinds of anomalous phenomena. And I mean, anything and everything, weird creatures, ghost encounters, aliens, strange lights in the sky, animals raining down on the sky, floating on objects that had no explanation, just pretty much anything and everything that defied our known science. So later on, people ended up, you know, taking on the term Fortean to kind of cover as a blanket statement all of the fringe ideas. So what makes it different for myself is that I don't just do paranormal stuff. If it's weird, I'm there. You know, I cover ufology and cryptozoology. But not only that, I have a very strong belief that while I can't say all of these things are connected, I think that a lot of them are. Mm-hmm. And I very much believe that there is a piece of the puzzle kind of missing within combining all of those topics together. And that's kind of going to be our key to discovery if we are going to ramp this up and take it to a more scientific level.
The paranormal is such a huge field.
Sure.
But between Bigfoot, UFOs, the Fae, ghosts, cryptids, what would you say you're most interested in?
Ooh, that is a really hard question. I know. How can you ask me this? That's tough.
You know, because sometimes I have people, my followers.
Sure.
They get pissed off if I just stay on UFOs. Okay. They want to hear about spirits. They want to hear about demonology. Mm-hmm. You know, then I talk about that. You know, somebody else says, I want to hear about, you know, have said nothing on Bigfoot or Loch Ness, you know. I mean, there's people out there who only focus on one thing. Mm-hmm. And so I was just curious. I mean, because you cover a wide range.
Everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do. When I started doing this full time, the reason why I did get into it was because I was approached to work on a Mothman documentary. And I say a Mothman documentary, but it really wasn't that. It was going to be like a 25 minute long YouTube video. And they thought, you know, everybody kind of thought it would be funny if I got on there and presented as the quote unquote cryptozoologist. So I was asked to go spend a weekend in Point Pleasant, West Virginia to attend the Mothman Festival. And, you know, I was like, okay. Now, at that time in my life, even though I was very much into mostly cryptozoology and maybe some other topics of fringe, I mean, I was into the paranormal, you know, I was into aliens. I was very skeptical at the time. I went to school. I flip-flopped a couple of times. Now, I'm a proud college dropout, but I went to college for, initially it was criminal psychology, and then it was astrophysics, and then I would go back between the two, and then eventually I chose motherhood. So very interesting, you know, checkered path there. But I've always been very scientifically driven, and so therefore a lot of these topics are really hard to chew when you need viable science in order to believe them. So anyway, I didn't believe in the Mothman. I was like, oh, this is silly, but it's fun. You know, it's really it's touristy. It's really gimmicky. Yeah. Let's partake. And when I went, and this was the first time I ever spent in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, things definitely happened. And it was very strange. And it's so much so, well, a lot of people know, and I know now that it's called synchronicity had happened. Synchronicity on such a large scale that, I mean, you can't, it's not coincidence anymore. You know, so from that point on, I kind of started digging into a little bit more and decided to take that research and now make my own Mothman documentary, which is why we've got Sinking the Mothman. But ever since that happened, you know, 2 years ago, I don't get to choose the things that I investigate now. It just depends on what's presented to me. And sometimes that is in the way of me kind of remembering something, you know, like Helltown, Ohio, which I'm sure you're familiar with. I'm assuming probably a good chunk of your listeners are, if they're local or what have you. That's been one topic that keeps continuously coming up. And it's to the point to where you almost can't ignore it anymore. And, you know, also Dogman has been a really interesting, you know, which again, was something I was completely skeptical of. There's no way a bipedal dog is walking around, you know, out there. It's the size of a man, but you know, here we are and it continues to pop up and I'm going on an expedition in the spring to go look for it, you know? So which one is my favorite? That depends on the week, I suppose.
Yeah, you had mentioned Mothman.
Sure.
I don't know too much about zoology. One of your episodes on your podcast, I'm just going through a few today,
And I didn't know that, you know, Mothman was celebrating its 55th anniversary. Is that what you said on there?
Probably, you know, Mothman, that's a really strange, because when I say Mothman, most of your listeners, and you know, I kind of went through some of your episodes as well, see that you do a lot of paranormal things. Mm-hmm. And while there's definitely overlay within those communities and fan groups, right, we're all, it's all basically the same family. You know, when a lot of people hear Mothman, what they immediately think about is the flap, you know, the 1966 to 1967 flap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that I'm set to prove, I guess I'll start here. My mom asked me when she found out I was working on a Mothman documentary. She said, well, aren't there already Mothman documentaries out there? And she's right. There are. Mm-hmm. But the difference is that, again, people have this centered around this Silver Bridge collapse. And it didn't start and stop anywhere. And that's the big misconception here. There never was a flap of sightings. It has always been here, and it has always been everywhere throughout the entire world, all the time happening. People seeing Mothman, they're just not calling it Mothman when they see it. They're calling it other things.
Yeah. See, both of us have a mutual friend in V, you know, Life yeah. Paranormal to V. Mm-hmm. And that's when I first found out about you.
Yeah. That's my best friend. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because she had mentioned it a while back, I think it was last year. And she said, oh, yeah, you have to have Asheros on your show, you know, because she's so interesting, you know. And that's why I have to give V a shout out, you know, because I found out of you through her, you know.
Sure.
On your YouTube channel and your podcast, it's called On Wednesdays, We Talk Weird.
Correct.
What basically is that podcast about?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a weekly podcast about pretty much anything and everything weird. You know, when I really started getting into this, and again, I did it full time, I had a string of events that had happened in my life that kind of led me to do this full time. Again, even that portion of it, I didn't choose. It was, I believe now, very much divinely guided, which, you know, one day I'll share probably in depth, but, you know, I'll save the story for now. You know, I started because when you do this full time, nobody pays you to go hunt monsters. Uh-huh. There's no government agency you can work for. You know, it's not, there's nothing like that going on. So you kind of have to get creative on your income, and somebody, you know, so of course I'm like, well, I could make content. A podcast was a really easy way to kind of push out that content, generate a following, get people excited for the things that I was working on, and then give me a reason to talk about other things. I mean, I'm passionate about so much, because we don't just talk about like the creatures and the lore surrounding, you know, this stuff. We'll talk about true crime cases. We'll talk about, you know, conspiracies is another one. I mean, we've even covered topics like me and my co-host, Pat, we talked about being weird and being parents. I have a 10-year-old daughter, you know, and so mm-hmm. like, how does that affect our kids? You know, we've talked about everything, but, you know, I kind of made it because a lot of people that make these shows and do these things, and no offense to anybody, I respect everybody that has a hustle out there, and I will support you to the end. But most of the shows are very boring. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very monotone. They're very set to be scary and meant to make you feel scared. And I've never felt that way. You know, as many times as I've been out in the woods looking for things that supposedly don't exist, or whatever, you know, they're supposed to be jarring, I've never been scared. I've always had a really good time doing it. And, you know, no offense again to the people that are into this stuff, I'm not doing it to make you a fan of mine. I'm doing it because I want to show the rest of the world who is skeptical, who doesn't understand how this stuff works, to get them to change their minds on the topics. So I started doing that with comedy, because comedy is the best way that you can possibly bond with another person. If you're laughing together, you're bonding together. And when you bond with somebody, then you're more willing to listen to the crazy shit that they're trying to tell you. And so we, you know, we did it, you know, to kind of make a really relaxed space for people to check out and not feel the pressure or not be scared to come give it a listen, you know, to come with an open mind and just to show that even though we have these crazy beliefs, we are also just people living and working every day. And that's what we did. And I called it On Wednesdays We Talk Weird because it's a fun name. It's the only thing that pops up when you Google it. And it's also based off of John Keel's Wednesday phenomenon. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I haven't, no.
Oh, okay. Well, John Keel is a for another 40 investigators, basically ufologists mostly. He's the one that wrote the Mothman prophecies. He's the reason why the Mothman became a household name, I suppose. But he had a theory called the Wednesday phenomenon. What he had deduced, he'd taken 700 UFO reports and ran the numbers on them and had found that most of them happened on Wednesday. And so he thought that the numbers would probably hold up against other strange anomalous phenomena and that, you know, we would find this trend on Wednesdays, which was miraculous if we're talking about intelligent life, because if you're an alien species and you live on another planet than we do, you don't live on the same timeline that we do. Your time is just different. Mm-hmm. The time on the Earth is different than the time on Mars and so on and so forth. But that was just another sign of intelligence that they had actually learned to use our time and you know, to utilize it for some odd reason.
It kind of blew my mind when I was watching, I think it was 60 Minutes or something. I was talking about that telescope they just launched.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it hit me that, you know, if you're outside looking at a star, that star is like 25, 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It could have exploded last year. We won't know about it till I'll probably be dead.
You're right. You would never know.
You know, so the time, like you're saying, the time travel and before and after.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was wild.
The best media depiction that you can get, I feel like, as somebody who's studied astrophysics, is, mm-hmm. you know, in a media setting that really portrays it well, is the movie Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey. I don't know if you've seen that one. And it's hard. While you're watching it, your brain starts to hurt. And that's because...
I had a hard time following that one.
Right. And it's because you're a third dimensional creature not meant to understand those concepts.
And you had another episode, Did We Land on the Moon? I loved that one with your co-host, Pat.
Yeah. Yeah. He was very, a lot of people were shocked by my take on that.
I wasn't really shocked on it, you know, to tell you the truth. I mean, I'm kind of weird too, so, you know, but.
Sure.
You know, you're talking about before, you know, some people, you know, they want to scare you with their podcast or scare you with their stories. And what I found out from other people I've talked to and my own experience in the past 40 years of doing this is it's not on all the thousands of dollars you put into your paranormal equipment that you go out investigating.
Right.
To me, it's your body. You know, once you go out there and it's you yourself, you're yourself as a tool, you know, so you will experience the push or the cold breeze or
sure.
the flick or the, or some, in some cases, the bite, you know. So, yeah, to me, it's always been a physical.
And I absolutely, you know, I'll tell you, that has been the biggest challenge of making this documentary, because you can't, there's no way that you can explain synchronicity to somebody who hasn't ever experienced it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it has been really hard to translate that, you know, just this overwhelming sense of knowing, you know, and to get that on film to show as proof. And a lot of times, you know, with this, I speak to tons and tons of witnesses and things like that, you know, and my eyewitnesses that I talk to with all of their encounters, all of their experiences, I know these people, I really get to know them, you know, inside and out as people. That just makes me a good, you know, a good investigator, you know, so that way, you know, kind of who's telling you what and who's pulling your leg and, you know, but, you know, you get to know how these people operate. So that way you can kind of also get to know how they feel and, you know, their perception of a situation to see if the story that they're telling you matches up with what you can already kind of tell about them and their atmosphere. It's really strange. It's hard to explain.
I always interview the people with firsthand experience.
Absolutely.
I want to hear that my sister's brother-in-law's second removed cousin or whatever, you know, it has to be you that's seen it, heard it, felt it. I don't know. That's just myself, you know, and
yeah,
just, I think probably because of my own personal experiences.
Sure.
Up until I was 12 years old, I never believed in a ghost or anything, right. You know, right. So I think you're right. You know, unless you experience yourself and you go out there and, you know, you're investigating possibilities. You know, I never go out on investigation to search out a ghost or a spirit. I go out to try to debunk it. You know, what is, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's something else.
Yeah.
You know, I never search out, you know, just something I don't know what I'm getting into.
No, that's smart. Well, and I had this conversation the other day about skeptics in the field. And, you know, one thing that we struggle with a lot, because I am a show host, I have a, you know, a popular show that people like. And, you know, so, yeah, to a degree, yes, I'm an entertainer. I have to be. That's what makes people want to listen to what I have to say. That's great and all. But there's a weird fine line between people that are trying to just be entertaining and people that are really out here because maybe they want their own answers, or maybe they want to prove something, or maybe they want to further the science, you know, whatever it is. So you kind of walk that line. And so those of us that are considered skeptics in the community, I mean, we're the black sheep of the black sheep. But you know what? Nothing to me is more exciting than me taking a case, looking at every single possibility, every single thing that we know scientifically, and going, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that. And then landing on, huh, well, that is strange, because then you got something, you know. So
I went through, I think it was your Instagram post, and I love the cup. I wrote a couple of these quotes down that you had said.
Sure.
The first one was, there's a huge difference between wanting to believe and propagating bullshit. The 14 world is interesting enough. We don't need fake stories being pushed by people parading around as investigators and experts. Don't fall for it.
Yep.
Totally love that, man. I mean,
it's true. I mean, you know, it's just because it does make it harder. You know, what I learned a long time ago about really smart people is that really smart people don't have the gift of gab. Okay. They have a really hard time communicating. A lot of times when somebody is really intelligent and they can take in large concepts. One thing that I use a lot in my research is string theory. Are you familiar with string theory?
You know, I came across that like 2 years ago.
I mean, I'm sure you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. It's just, string theory is just the most widely accepted, you know, theory in physics regarding our dimensions.
Right.
And it just says basically that we live in an infinite world with infinite possibilities. So you start at dimension one, which is one point. Then you start at dimension two, which is 2 points, but also the line between those 2 points. Then you start at dimension three. That's where we live. And that is the depth, right? So that is what is beyond that point. That's where we start getting shapes. Then you get in 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10. 10 ends up being the infinite. And so I use it a lot to explain a lot of these occurrences and events. Basically, how I try to explain it to people is, imagine that you draw a cartoon. Okay. And you can influence that cartoon to do whatever you want. You can make it jog in place. You can make it drink a glass of water. You can even let that cartoon know that you exist. You can make it talk about you and give it sentience that you exist. We call it breaking the fourth wall in media. And then you can also take away that same sentience. And at the same time, that cartoon cannot influence you at all. Can't do anything to you to make your life any different. You can take a cone and you can push it through that cartoon's world. And what it's going to see, we know it's a cone going through a piece of paper, but what it's going to see is a dot that starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's consuming everything around it until eventually it just disappears. And that looks really strange to this two-dimensional creature, right?
Right.
So that's why we have things in our world that we see that don't necessarily make a lot of sense. It doesn't mean that they're not happening. It just means that we aren't intelligent enough to understand what's going on. So I use that a lot. And, you know, a lot of my research, it's one of the most popular things I talk about. But here's the thing about it. The people that invented string theory, very smart people, most people that are very smart, also have some type of neurodivergence. And typically with that neurodivergence comes the impossibility to be able to talk to people and explain these things and concepts that they can understand.
The common sense.
Yes. Just social skills, you know? And so
to me, everything outside of that, outside the realm.
We can't see, experience, know. I mean, we have, you know, you can try to it starts at the fourth dimension. Hop on YouTube, go type in what the fourth dimension's like, and you'll spend a while really trying to get it. And you'll kind of be like, I mean, that kind of makes sense. I'd be weird if life was like that, but it kind of makes sense. And really that is where it stops for you. Another way I like to explain it to people, imagine a $1 bill. Okay. Now imagine $10 in ones, right? So now you got 10 $1 bills. imagine $100 in ones. You can imagine that, right? I mean, uh-huh. it's a pretty good stack. Can you imagine $1,000 in ones?
Well, you're getting
maybe.
Tougher.
You know, getting tougher, right. And then you keep going up and up and up. And then at some point in infinite numbers, there's going to be a point where you're going to hit. And you're going to go, you know what? I don't know what that looks like. I got no way to imagine what that looks like. Why would you have so many ones on you? I mean, what, you know? And so it really starts to fall apart. So again, you've got all these huge cons. And that's just one. That's just string theory. Let's say that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just one. So you got all these people that don't know how to explain things to the modern masses. Okay. But then you have people that kind of get it. Now, whether that be because they have some type of extrasensory to them, whatever you believe. A lot of people believe that a lot of humans can have this extrasensory. Some believe that you're born with it. Whatever it is, some people can get it. And then they realize that there's this whole world of unexplained science that makes sense to them to their core. But who do they have representing that science? Well, you got people like, I don't know if you want me to name drop or not. I don't want to isolate your fans, but you know, I'll use a good example. You got people like Zach Bagans. Mm-hmm. He's got a great show. It's entertaining, but does he really have all, you know, a haunted museum, and did the demon house really have demons in it and burning it down helped or whatever it was, you know? Mm-hmm. No, probably not. Let's be perfectly. Does he go out to all these haunted locations and things happen all the time? No, they don't. I can tell you that because I go to them. So it doesn't happen every time. So we know it's entertainment value. Nothing wrong with doing it for entertainment, but when you have these people that are hungry for more and the only thing that they have to go off of is entertainers, you know, that's a problem. So it's a, like I said, a very thin line between this paranormal entertainment and then the actual science behind it. And, you know, one thing that I would personally like to do is to, you know, get some more serious eyes on this. We deserve funding for this type of research. We really do, especially, you know, with UAP disclosure happening.
I'll be right back when I get Asher's opinion on the Pentagon's UFO document release last year, right after these brief messages.
Hey everyone, Eric here. I am the host of the Unseen Paranormal Podcast. Join me for a new episode every Wednesday as I delve into the unseen world with historians, authors, researchers, and investigators as we try to understand and make sense of the paranormal. You can listen to past and future episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or at unseenparanormalpodcast.com. Please like the show on Facebook and share with your friends. And remember, some of the scariest things are unseen.
What did you think about the Pentagon report that came out last year on the UAPs?
I've been very vocal about this a lot. This is just a repeat of when we disclosed Project Blue Book. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it is going to always continue to be soft disclosure. There's never going to be a conference where they sit down and go, you know what? This is what's happening. We know that this is happening and this is what it is. But if you put all the pieces together on the topic of UAPs, I think there was just it was just announced that there was a college, I think in Germany, like a big Ivy League college that's now offering courses or something on UAP research. So this is very real. I mean, this is very real. And although it was topical, and I think it got people interested in the subject, to people like myself, this wasn't anything new. You know, we've seen this before. But, you know, I would like for them to be a little more forthcoming. I mean, I have my own theories as to why they're not.
Yeah. And, you know, and also I think what hurts everything is, you know, it's the government, you know, because they cover up so much stuff. I mean, sometimes they act like the people out there are just plain stupid. I think, what was it, 23 or 24 files they released, and there was only one that was, they concluded it was a weather balloon, like you're saying, Project Blue Book. And mm-hmm. before that,
oh yeah,
there have been people who've lost their lives, you know, mm-hmm. during these encounters. And nobody talks about that. It just blows my mind, even a county over from me, you know, Portage County, that they, same thing in 1966, where they chased the UFOs into Pennsylvania. And then they made the Close Encounters of the Third Kind out of that incident. Right. So, you know, Ohio's full of stories of even Bigfoot, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've got a lot of places. When I say ghosts in the valley, I mean, the valley is everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. We've got a lot. Well, that is what I mean, and I talked about it a little bit, so you can include this, but documentary number two is we've already started filming is based on concentrated areas of high strangeness. Because you look at these instances, if you look at a map and you start pinpointing this stuff, you know, what you notice is, you know, going all the way down the East Coast and all the way through the, you know, starting in like the Midwest and down a little bit. I mean, it's everywhere. And then within those everywhere, those spots have very high concentrated areas where all of these things are happening. And what I mean is it's not just, oh, there's been a bunch of Bigfoot there. No, it's Bigfoot and it's all the cryptids and it's aliens and it's ghosts and it's all just all these things. And then you kind of get in the middle of the United States. And as you start getting towards the center, it kind of becomes nothing and nothing and nothing. And then you get back out to the East Coast again. And then there's something, I mean, it ramps up all over again. There are definitely patterns, you mm-hmm. know, within these mappings that make it really important to talk about. But Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia in particular make some weird trifecta of just odd, you know. And so it is prime real estate. You know, a lot of people are like, well, Ohio, that's a flyover state. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You had another quote I've seen on Instagram. I love this one as well. Not believing in aliens is like taking a spoonful of water from the ocean and saying there are no whales or sharks in the ocean because there are none in my spoon.
Yeah.
I mean, that reminds me so much of, you know, because the ocean is so big, the universe is huge.
Huge.
So you can't just, because you don't have it in your spoon or you're in your wheelhouse, it don't exist.
Exactly. That's, and you're right. And that is one of my favorites also, just because, I mean, my gosh, my, I mentioned I have a 10-year-old and she is just now learning about space in school. Mm-hmm. And of course I'm way excited. You know, they talked about the Loch Ness Monster one time at school and they're like, oh, it's just a legend. And I was angry. I was like, no, it's not. But anyway, you know, so now she's doing space and I'm like, oh, great. Awesome. This is my thing. You know, and, I wanted to show her there's a really good YouTube video I like, and, I'll pass it your way if you want to share it or, you know, what have you. But it's so fascinating because it really shows the scope of exactly how large the universe is. Mm-hmm. And there's a very famous picture that was taken by, you know, the Hubble telescope. And within that Hubble telescope, I think that there was only like 10,000 galaxies that you could see in it. And there's so much more beyond that. And we know that there is, but it really shows exactly how small we are, because within one galaxy has over 100,000 solar systems.
Right.
And we live on a planet inside of a solar system, inside of a galaxy, you know, and then it just continues to expand from that point on to all these words and these fun things that most people don't know. And that is only observable space, and what we call observable space, which isn't actually space that we can actually physically see. We can't, we just kind of guess. We're like, well, it's probably there, but we really have no idea, you know? So it's just, when you look at a video like that and it really explains to you how small we really are, you know, for us to say that we know anything about anything is just very egotistical. I mean, it's extremely narcissistic to parade like we are some type of superior, because we're just not.
Right.
We're just not. You know, we can't even leave our planet. We're not that great.
What's your take on doppelgangers?
That's a really interesting one. I kind of started diving into this a little bit, because my entire life I've had people coming up to me going, hey, I saw you last night. And you know, okay, I really didn't think about this until just recently, when somebody that I'm friends with in real life, so we work together and now we're friends on social media and we talk on social media, but we don't hang out. You know, social media, it's weird. Uh-huh. And so anyway, he had messaged me and he said, hey, I saw you at the gas station. I was right behind you. And, you know, I was too shy to say hi. And I was like, huh? I've been at home all day, you know? And he was like, really though? That I'm like, no. He's like, well, I could have sworn that was you. And that was after I'd started getting into investigating stuff like this. And, you know, and it really kind of hit me. I'm like, you know what? I've been a victim of that my whole life. People are constantly saying that, oh, you know, I saw you. And I'm like, no, that wasn't me. While I haven't come across my own doppelganger, I do think that there could be something to it. Now, whether or not it is just fully coincidental. I don't believe in coincidence, or if maybe it's a time slip of some sort. I would be really interested to find out.
Did some little bit of research on it. I was like, scientists say there's six of you out there. I mean, identical you, could be around the world anywhere.
Sure.
My brother texted me today and sent me a picture of me.
Weird.
Picture looked like me. You know, and I'm like looking at this picture, like I'm looking at myself. And then I read, you know, there's like six of you out there that have the same characteristics, you know, same looks.
Wow. I see. I didn't even know any of that. My daughter kind of did the same thing when she was, and she was probably two or three, and we were at Walmart, and we were in like the baby aisle, like the diaper aisle. And there was a specific diaper box there, and this child was on it. And my daughter looks at it. She goes, "Hey, that's me." And I looked at it and it looked just like her. It was really weird.
Well, we were talking about, you know, the living. I mean, who's still living? You know, like they're still living, right? And then you're double. But then they hit me with, well, what if your doppelganger was, say, the 17th century? You know, it was you. And I said, it's like a reincarnation. She said, no, it'd be the same you like 300 years ago. So, it was a really wild conversation. Wow. But I don't know if you came across that or.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I vaguely looked into it a little bit. I just did the, I was a speaker at the Paranormal Expo in Marietta, Ohio. A lot of people, I was really surprised because I was the one person I gave a presentation on the Mothman. And I was really shocked to find out that there was actually people that came to this Paranormal Expo just to hear me talk about the Mothman. And wow. I was like, oh, wow. You know, so that was very cool. Then again, of course, with that area, the Mothman sightings were happening all around. So it was, topical, for the demographic. The people that run it, they run the tours throughout Marietta. It's called Hidden Marietta, the ghost tours and things like that. She was telling me about this location there and how they had gone, and they had a specific man or something in the group, and he was kind of hanging out with them or whatever, and then he kind of disappeared for a second and then came back, and he had just shown up. So whoever it was that was hanging out with them was not the same guy. They were calling him a doppelganger spirit. And so I thought that was interesting, because this is more talking about not people that are actually living currently. This is more like a spiritual, I guess, a type of, but see, I would see that more as like a trickster spirit rather than a spirit that just looks just like you.
I love Marietta.
Oh yeah.
My daughter lived there. I love that hotel at Lafayette.
That's where the expo was.
There's so much activity in that hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the ghost tours that they put on there.
Yeah, we went, we stayed there. We stayed at the Lafayette for the expo. And, the night before, we just thought we'd, break out, do a little Estes method, break out the spirit box and, see what was going on. Mm-hmm. I can't say that it was too effective, but what I can say is that it sounded differently than it normally did. I don't know how to explain it. I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show have probably heard what a spirit box sounds like. It's very noisy and loud and uncomfortable,
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, and it just sounds like noise. And, every once in a while you can pick something up, and sometimes something really good comes in and you're like, oh, that's great. But this was different. This was like, you could hear what was being said, but there was like hundreds of voices saying it. And I know a lot of people are like, well, that's what the spirit box does. Yes and no, because it's not legible at all. This was, and it was really, really weird, but it kept telling us something about a square, kept mentioning a square, and we still don't know what that means, but that's fine. Whatever. Mm-hmm. So the next day we do the event, and people keep talking about the basement, and I had like walked the halls the night before to go like get ice or something. And I heard people in their rooms talking about the basement, and I'm like, I wonder what's in the basement. So, I went back to the room. I was like, hey, tomorrow when we're done here, we got to go check out the basement. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. So I'm leaving the event. Well, we're packing up, we're getting ready to leave. And one of the event organizers stops me, and I hadn't talked to this girl at all. And she's like, hey, I want to talk to you, wait a minute. And I was like, okay. So I go and I talk to her. She's like, are you still doing that, injured cold investigation, which, we can probably talk about that a little bit later. But, I speak with the Derenbergers. I'm very close with them. And they allegedly have this lifelong friendship, relationship, kinship with an alien named Injured Cold. And Tanya, the person who carries on her father's story, who started this with Injured, she lives right across the river from Marietta, right across it in Parkersburg, West Virginia. you know, so I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I still talk to Tanya, you know, what's, she was like, well, I just wanted to talk to you about something. She said, you know, in the basement, she said, most of the ghosts here, they're very friendly. You know, there's really nothing bad. It's just kind of mischievous, friendly stuff. You know, she said, but in the basement, people are, they get hit, they, you know, they get kicked, they get bitten, hair pulled, they get locked in the rooms. You know, some really bad stuff down there. A lot of people don't like being down there. She was like, and, you know, we were kind of looking into that a little bit more. And we started having reports of people seeing this, you know, we call him the grinning man because he has this giant grin across his face. And she's like, we've got pictures of him. And she so it shows me pictures. Sure enough, that's what it looks like. You know, and she thought that I would want to know that because they call injured cold the grinning man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I'm like, well, we got to go down to this basement. Let's go. So, you know, she was telling me that most of this takes place in what they call the pipe room down there while the pipes meet up for the hotel. So we go down there and we're walking around and, you know, I find the pipe room. But before you get into the pipe room, there's like this other little room you walked into first. And it's pitch black, dark. There's not a light switch anywhere. And I'm like, this is great. And, you know, then you get into this little dark room and there's two more doors. Now, one of the doors was wide open. And so I poked my head in. I had my flashlight on my phone on and I was just kind of looking around and I saw some chairs in there. And I just thought, you know what, this is weird, but it's probably because, you know, they're doing the tours and stuff here. So it's probably just touristy stuff, whatever. But I went around to the other door because it looked like that the room kind of met in L shape and was around this original room that I'm standing in. So I went to the other door and it's clearly labeled pipe room. And I'm like, well, that's the pipe room. And I go to open the door and I reach my hand down to the doorknob. And right before my hand touches it, it locks. It locked. I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to leave now. And I did. I walked out. I was like, well, okay, that was it. Didn't want me here. And then I found that I had found like a little conference room or something that had other doors in it. And I'm not afraid. I'm just going everywhere around this hotel. And, you know, when I got into the conference room, same thing happened, but both doors in that room locked. And I was like, okay, we got to leave. So I, you know, now we definitely want to go back and investigate the Lafayette a little bit more because of that experience. I definitely want to see what was going on with the basement. I knew that there was a lot of people, you know, when you're at a paranormal expo, you're in the same room with a lot of, you know, psychics and mediums and all these people with all these extrasensory powers. And when you also have them, it's very overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. So you are a psychic medium?
I hate to say that I am, but I mean, I've definitely had some very interesting experiences happen and I'm still trying to reason with what that means exactly. You know, when I started all this, I was a complete skeptic on spirituality. You know, I was just one of those people, when you die, nothing happens. There is no spirit, you're matter. You know, that's it. But I've had these really strange instances happen, particularly in some very high activity places. When I first started investigating, one of the first places I investigated was the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a hotel. I mean, it's really gimmicky and it's fun. You walk in, they got a whole gift shop. You know, they do ghost tours and they've been on these ghost shows and it's a beautiful hotel. But as we kind of started walking the different floors, because we would explore the different floors, there's four floors to it and a basement. And as we got higher up and higher up, I mean, we took the stairs. And I would keep going up. And by the time we hit the third floor, I was completely out of breath and I just couldn't. I'm sweating. I mean, I'm drenched in sweat. And now, granted, I'm not a marathon runner or anything, but I'm not so unfit that I can't handle a couple half flights of stairs, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was weird. It was, and I thought, but I just thought, okay, maybe I'm getting winded. Maybe I'm nervous. Who knows, you know? But we're on the third floor and I kind of take a minute. The guy I was with at the time, you know, he's like, let's go sit down. And I'm like, okay, let's go sit down. And we kind of sat, like I said, the stairs were half flights. And so on the, you know, when you get down to one half flight, there's like a little sitting area you can sit at. So we sit in one of the areas. And while we're sitting there, we hear, you know, this thump, 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 and then a door slam. It was like footsteps, like running footsteps and a door slam. And the door slammed right in front of us. I mean, the door slam noise was right in front of us, but there was a door there and it was shut the whole time. But he went, looked out in the hallway, there's nobody there. And then we were like, okay, well, let's try again. So then we started to try, you know, traverse back up the stairs to the fourth floor. And I physically could not go up the stairs. I couldn't do it. And I was just extremely overwhelmed. And I kind of had a weird out of body experience that was happening where it's like, it sounds so crazy when I say it, but it's like, I guess I got to remember my company. But it's like, I could see a different set of eyes, and the different set of eyes was coming towards me.
Uh-huh.
And I was, you know, not able to go towards it. It was very strange. I'd never experienced anything like it before previously in my life, but it was very overwhelming. I started panicking. I was having a panic attack. So, you know, we left. And the thing about when I went to this place, the person that I was with took me there. I did not know anything about this hotel. Knew absolutely nothing about its history. Didn't know about its regular haunts, anything like that. So we left and we get in the car, and then I just start pouring out facts, just everything that I knew about this place. You know, the man that I was saying, well, the man's really evil. He's got something to hide. It's something to do with his wife and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, I later find out that the Crescent Hotel was really famous for being, first it was a place for single women that were never going to be wed off to go. It wasn't exactly a crazy house, wasn't exactly a boarding school, but they would all get together and go learn some trade that they could then use because they were never going to have husbands. And so a lot of things considering that, but then it was turned into a cancer hospital, and the doctor that ran it, he had a magical cure for cancer, and the people would come to cure their cancer. And he was basically injecting them with like a mix of like watermelon juice and bleach. And I mean, he was killing these people, but then he would lie to the families, and he would hide the bodies, lie to the families and say, hey, I still need the check for them to stay here. They're doing great. Just send me the money. Very awful guy. There was a big falling out divorce with his wife, you know, stuff I'd never, that I shouldn't have known, but I knew. And he had told me the story afterwards, and I kind of looked into it. And at that point in time, I kind of realized, okay, things are different. And even now I'll get, you know, just overwhelming feelings of knowing things that I probably shouldn't, or, you know, things that I've never been told, or I think I identify more as clairvoyant, mm-hmm. because I just kind of get a hunch when something is. Mostly it's good, actually, but to me, the only way that I describe it at the time that it comes out is something big is going to happen, and then lo and behold, something big does, and I don't know why I know it, I just do. So
you were mentioning about the bad spirits, that some people say bad spirits, evil spirits, ornery spirits. I always said that, you know, if you're an asshole in life, you're an asshole in death, you know.
Sure.
My thought process is always, you die, you go into heaven or you went to hell. Then you have that in between where kind of stuck. And I had a guest on that says, well, there is no heaven, there is no hell. And if you're trying to move a spirit on, you're actually killing that spirit. And I'm not going to say he's right or wrong. I mean, that was a different way of looking at it. And so I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts that's in my library the other day. And one of their guests came on. It really irked me when he said, anybody can do perform a minor exorcism with no experience. You know, I'm thinking to myself, I just had a demonologist on my show, and he was telling me just the opposite, that if you're not trained in exorcisms, you shouldn't do them, you know. And I just know that two times I was involved with the demon that was there, I didn't do either one of those. I called in people that do those, because I'm not experienced in that. And I've seen what can happen when you screw around with something that you're not, you know, you're not qualified to touch upon. What do you think about that?
Ooh, that is okay. So I stood up at the Paranormal Expo that I just spoke at, and told a room full of people at a Paranormal Expo that I don't believe in ghosts. And there was gasps aplenty. People rioted. They walked out. No, it wasn't that bad. But they let me explain, and I'll explain here. I don't believe in ghosts in the traditional sense. I don't believe that ghosts are dead people. And I just have a really hard time buying into that. I believe that there are imprinting with, like, the, you know, we have the repeat hauntings, you know, this lady in white will show up at 3 a.m. every night. I believe that happens, but I don't think it's because she's consciously there doing it, just because there's something to energy and the way that it's stored in the world around us that makes it just have that, leave that footprint for some reason, call it a glitch in the matrix, whatever you want to do. I do believe that there are trickster beings, and you can call them beings, you can call them spirits, you can call them aliens, whatever you want, that will mimic family members. You know, I'm not going to believe if a ghost comes to me and says, I'm your dead great grandfather. I'm not going to believe a ghost, first of all. I think that's a little naive. And I do believe that some of them can be evil, whatever the hell it is that they are. Yeah. I mean, just as much as, you know, we are capable of being evil, why wouldn't they? You know, I think that they do have that power to do so. You know, as far as exorcisms or getting rid of demonic energies, I've never encountered so far anything that I felt like was truly demonic. Just things that I felt like were very icky, things that I didn't like to be around. But it's a very similar sensation to being around, you know, you're around a person and you just kind of know, you're like, I don't like this person. It's like that, but it's definitely a lot more amplified. And I think the only reason why it's amplified is because, not because it's way worse than that person that I don't like to be around, but just because it is a sensation that's different, because it is touching you in a different level than just being person-to-person interaction. Because again, we're third dimensional beings, not really meant to have these experiences, but we do. And so I think that, you know, I can't tell people what to believe and what not to believe. Hey, that's something I tell people all the time. I'm going to give you my professional opinion about all of these things, but it is not my job to tell you what you think. And I'm not going to judge you for what you think, because again, that's not my place. I'm just here to give you the information as I know it through my experiences and things like that, you know. But I think that, you know, if somebody were to come to me and say, hey, I know you're an investigator and I have this really evil, you know, demon or something in my home, I'm not going to pick up that case. I'll send you to somebody that I think can, but I wouldn't trust it enough for myself to be like, oh, yeah, let me go see what I can do. You know, it's not changing a light bulb, you know, so I wouldn't mess with it.
Well, I'm going to have to agree to disagree on one. I do believe you have your own opinion, but I do believe there is ghosts, only because of what I experienced. And that's just me.
Sure.
And what happened in the 4 years, and I can also say that since we moved out of that, we lived there for 4 years. Once I moved, we moved out of the house, 20 years later, friends of ours rented that same house, and then same experiences in that house. 10 years after that, same experiences in the house, and the house burned down. And I still, to this day, if I go by that property where the house used to be, matter of fact, that's what my book's on, is that house, is a ghost that was in the house. I still get this eerie feeling, and it's really strange because I don't get that any other place I go.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I do understand. I mean, if you've never experienced it, like you might have some gas where you don't say, I don't believe in ghosts. I can dig that, because most of the people have never experienced that.
It's not that I don't believe in hauntings, because I think people get confused when I say I don't believe in ghosts. It's that I don't believe that whatever it is that's causing those instances are dead people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that there's something else. And I think that proof kind of comes in the pudding of these,
because we don't know what, you know, we don't know what it is, you know.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's what I say, whatever you want to call it, you want to call it a ghost, call it ghost, mm-hmm. call it alien, call it that, spirits, beings, whatever. I think they're all the same thing. And I think that none of us quite know exactly what they are, or I wouldn't have a job anymore, you know? And so that's what I say all the time. You know, if I knew, I'd be making so much money, and I'm not. You know, there's no money to be had in selling your story to anybody. You know, it just doesn't exist. But yeah, I mean, you know, I just want to make that clear, because then mm-hmm. people are like, oh, well, she doesn't believe in ghosts. That's that. No. It's not necessarily what you think it is. It's just that I don't personally believe that these things are whatever name we are giving them, you know. And again, I don't believe that they're people that we once loved or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I do believe in like residual energies. And again, I do believe in hauntings, just that they're very different. And so, like you mentioned, all this activity going on centered around this one property, you know, well, you know, who's to say it's not that property doesn't sit on a portal of some sort, you know?
Right. Buildings are built on sacred burial ground.
Right.
Well, then you have all that activity, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, right. And I think, well, and the thing is that we have been, you know, living and dying on this planet for a very, very, very long time. You know, of course, your home that you're living in, everybody listening to this, wherever you're living, I guarantee you're on top of a body, you know, at least a couple. And, you know, but I think that there's something to the fact that you mentioned a specific word, sacred, you know, or like you're talking about places like asylums and things like that, where a lot of energy is put into, you know, those very pitiful lives. There's a cemetery out in Columbus, Ohio, which is at the, it used to be the, the state insane hospital. It's called the insane cemetery or something. I mean, that's really what it's called.
Really?
And I've got pictures of it. I'll send them over. But some of the graves there, first of all, and it's not very big at all, but it's actually sits right outside the police station now, and you can go there. But some of the graves there, most of them are just numbers, or they just say specimen. You know, that's what it's. But also the Ridges in Ohio University, the Ridges, the cemetery right there, also has very similar headstones with, again, numbers for these people, you know.
Yeah, Athens is very, very,
very active. Mm. Yeah, very active. Well, it's right by the Serpent Mound. It's not far, you mm-hmm, know, from right. that area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so when you have these sacred grounds, you know, or very special circumstances, you know, how can we say that they're not somehow opening up portals to let these things, whatever they are, in and out of the area? You know, we just don't have enough information to go off of yet to determine what's causing it or why it seems to happen again in these concentrated areas. Because it, you know, if you follow the patterns, they're definitely there. So
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with Ashers right after these brief messages.
Hi-ya! Hey guys, welcome to Tokyo Munchies Podcast. We talk about Japanese candy, snacks, chocolate. We talk about the Tokyo weather, the Japan news, walking in my garden with Kyle while sitting in the pool. Also, we talk about Ten Sucker Sports, JapanRumAndBox.com, and Skateboarding Japan. So, drop by, check out our podcast. And as always, this is Kyle from Tokyo Munchies. Hee-yah! Come get some.
I do want to go back on your documentary you're working on.
Sure, absolutely. Sure. Sinking the Mothman is the documentary name.
Primarily, it focusing on the Mothman?
I am. You know, so this is number one as part of a series of continued documentaries that'll keep going, which, as I mentioned, you know, we second documentaries about these concentrated areas of high strangeness. You know, but this one, of course, is going to tell the classic tale of the Mothman that everybody knows between 1966 and 1967 on the Ohio, along the Ohio River. We experienced the string of Mothman activity. And, you know, that's where the Mothman's from. But it goes beyond that. You know, I start going into other theories about what people believe this thing was and what it possibly could be. And then I kind of go off the rails of going, well, okay, yeah, that's the end of the Mothman story, except it isn't and never was. In my own investigations of the Mothman, a girl came to me one night and she was like, oh, I just saw the Mothman. I need to report it to you. I was like, cool, great. A lot of people do, you know. And she was like, yeah, I saw him. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm with my boyfriend, and we just, you know, this is like, this is going to be the hard part, but, you know, we just took some edibles and we're in our hotel and we saw this thing with glowing red eyes flying around outside of our hotel room. And when she had told me her story, and I don't know why it happened or what trudged this up in me, I remember that I had an incident in 2016 and I was at a friend's house. And yes, I was taking edibles. Now, in 2016, that was a hard year. And, right. You know, it was, you know, marijuana is not a big deal, right? I mean, it shouldn't be anymore, right?
Right.
But, you know, and I've smoked it, I've eaten it, you know, whatever you can do with it, I've done throughout the years. And, you know, granted, at the time, I wasn't big into it. I was still a very regular smoker, but we had made edibles and we were eating them. And, you know, that was fun. We had a good time. And it came, it was bedtime, you know, it was probably between 2 and 3 in the morning, which is, you know, prime time. And I was laying on her couch and I'm just freaking out. I mean, just out of nowhere, I'm just not having a good time anymore. I felt very, very overwhelmed. And I look into the corner of the room and she's got this big TV cabinet with like some doors and they're open and it sits up. It's probably about 6 feet tall. So there's a little bit of space between the top and the ceiling. And I'm looking at that space between, you know, on top of this TV cabinet. And all of a sudden, something starts forming on top of it. And it was just kind of like a black, it was kind of like a shadow. And then that shadow started turning into a mist. And then that mist kind of started, you know, coming into, you know, making a head type shape. And then the head kind of looked like it was sprouting arms, but then the arms start kind of going and reaching out over the whole room. And not only were they expanding outwards, but they were expanding downwards. And what I'd realized was they're not arms, they're wings. And so at that point in time, I calmly get up somehow and go to her room, and I wake her up, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm scared. And she's just laughs at me. She's like, oh my God, you're high. You need to go back. You know, but she got up and she stayed up with me, and I never really talked about it because, again, this was 2016. Now, I did not start digging into these things really until 2019. And I just questioned what I saw. There was a logical explanation. I was doing drugs, you know, and what have you. But marijuana, it, you know what? You very rarely can hallucinate when you're doing marijuana, but you kind of know if you're one of those people. And I was never one of those people. And again, it's not like I wasn't a regular user. It's not to say that you didn't see what you saw, because you know what you saw. You know exactly what you saw. And it hit me. It just made a lot of sense for the timeline of my life at that point in time, where it had ended up leading. And then it ended up leading to me investigating the Mothman of all things, which was not ever something that I believed in to begin with. And so one thing that I really try to drive home to people is what these Mothman encounters entail. Because again, the popular idea is that the Mothman caused this bridge collapse and that he brings doom with him. He's a harbinger of doom. And I don't believe that. After speaking with people that have witnessed this thing, and, you know, again, I said in the beginning, I really get to know my witnesses. I don't think it's a harbinger of doom at all. I think that it's some type of harbinger of growth. And growth can be very painful. It can be very hard. Things kind of have to fall apart to come back together. And that in and of itself even ties into the Silver Bridge collapse. Because when that bridge collapsed, it completely changed the way that we managed maintaining and building bridges across the world. And that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Terrible that all those people had to die. Sure, tragedy. But the outcome was very good and saved a lot more lives than we'd ever anticipated. So, of course, I go into other accounts, again, over the history and people that have seen this thing. I talk about stuff like the Owlman over in the UK that happened in the 70s that looked very much like how the Mothman's described to look. You know, I talk about people that believe that they've seen or had encounters with angels, which when they describe it to you, they describe a, you know, black humanoid figure with wings and glowing red eyes, and it changed their life. You know, there's a lot to it that we really dig into that I feel like a lot of people just kind of let fly under the radar, because either because they never made the connection to this creature or because it just sounded so much funner to have this thing be responsible for a bridge collapse. I don't know, you know, but that's kind of the basis of what it is. And of course, the investigation takes us into these areas of high strangeness and where these things take place, which leads into number two. So,
yeah, you have a lot of people that, you know, they try to tie in, you know, the Owlman with the Mothman, with the Dogman. They're not the same.
Yeah.
I'm glad you touched on that, you know, and where will that be available to watch? Or is you going to, sell it as a, or you just can put it on YouTube, or how are you going to release
that?
No,
that's a great question. It hasn't been sold officially yet to any streaming services, but that's going to be the plan. However, the idea is that on the initial release, we will be selling individual. You'll be able to directly buy a digital copy or a physical copy on DVD or Blu-ray. So, you know, following me on social medias is probably the best idea, at least until we get a website up and running to really get this thing pushed out there. We focus more a lot on, it's just me and one other person making this documentary, but it is very much a feature length, you know, very, very prime documentary, you know, but because it's just us, it can be slow going, getting some of this marketing and things set up, because we're handling the investigations as well as all the filming and the creativity and the technical side. And so it's a lot. It's a big undertaking.
In the book you're writing, what's that? Yeah. Is that based on the same thing?
It is. The book is actually a companion book to go along with the documentary. So I have all these notebooks of papers everywhere of all the research. And, you know, I thought, well, hey, I could sell this, you know, so I'm putting it together in a nice little compact book that will be out. We're shooting for right now, the summer. So very, very soon, just a matter of getting it, you know, up and published. It does not have a title yet. Can't decide if I want it to be named the same as the documentary or something different, but it's basically a collection of Mothman sightings, you know, throughout time, split up into demographics and also through a timeline itself. And maybe anything else that I felt like we couldn't really go into great detail on during the documentary itself. You don't need one to enjoy the other, you know, but it is, you know, I mean, you can have both. That would be nice.
Right.
Or you can buy one. It's fine.
What's your plans for 2022?
Yeah. I mean, right now it's just making sure I get this documentary out. I've now been speaking at quite a few events and things like this. This was the first year that I've been invited on as a guest speaker at these things. Mm-hmm. So, of course, continuing to get the information out. You know, we've got the expedition that we'll be doing in Chicago, doing the Lake Michigan Mothman investigation there. We will be going to the Land Between the Lakes, which has a really popular dogman story, and that's only about 2 hours away from where I'm at. And so we're going to be down there a lot, doing a lot of investigations, and then even some Sasquatch research here in Ohio. So that'll be lots of fun.
And you're located down by Columbus?
I'm in Dayton. Well, you know, another area that I focus a lot on is because I'm so close, obviously, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. You know, that obviously UFOs have become a very heavy. I never thought that I would be a ufologist when I got into this. Again, I was in it for the cryptids. I was tricked. But, you know, it's been easy to investigate that side of things. And I've got three different people that I talk to that are very interesting characters. But, you know, UFO research in the area is definitely on the books to really hit hard on. So
you have mentioned the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Yeah.
Years ago, I mean, during 9/11, my wife and I were in Florida, and my sister-in-law's neighbor, who was an old retired Air Force, I don't know what his position was in the Air Force, but they took very good care of him, put gas in his car every day and brought him groceries. I mean, this is the Air Force. And we got to talk one night, you know, so I'm drinking bourbon and I'm getting him loosed up, you know, so he can talk to me about what he did in the Air Force. I found out he worked at Roswell back during the crash. And he was telling me about everything was at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going firsthand information from him, but he couldn't tell me anything about that, you know, other than everything was at Wright-Patterson.
Have you been? Have you gone to the museum there?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
And have you looked around the gift shop?
Yes.
They are very public about it.
They're public about it, but they won't let you near Hangar 18 or anything. That's
any of
there.
It. Right. They just, right. And, but I mean, meanwhile, you can buy a t-shirt that says, I saw the UFO at Wright-Patt, or, you know, there's aliens. They have books about the Roswell crash.
And it was so strange because we were there, I think, like it was a couple of years after 9/11. We were there on 9/11. Mm-hmm. So they had all this security. It was unbelievable.
Oh, I bet. And, I bet.
And you didn't want to mention
anything weird. Yeah. Well, most of the time, no, it's really weird.
Yeah, that's what's been interesting with me with this podcast. I come across interesting people, sure. And I learn, like, you know, off of V, you know, I learned, sure, about the Fae. I never knew about the Fae. You know, you touch it. I touch upon ghost spirits, UFOs, and
yeah,
Bigfoot. But not too, I haven't even done one yet on the Loch Ness Monster or,
okay,
Anything really on Mothman. You have to have people come forward with their, and you're the first one, you know, I've come across that actually has done some investigation on Mothman.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people report about it, you know, but they not as in depth as you are.
Yeah. Well, and we, you know, I talked about that when I did the presentation at the expo. And like I said, there was people that came out just to hear the presentation. And it kind of hit me that, you know, I think I'm the only one that does it.
Well, I'm impressed.
And so, well, thank you. You know, I didn't mean to. You know, again, I didn't choose Mothman. You know, people assume that's your favorite. It's, mm-hmm, not really. It's just that, just found me. I chose me, and here we are. So,
well, Azurez, I want to thank you for coming on today and sharing your stories, and I'll put all your links in the show notes so people can find out where they can contact you. And
no, that's great. And if you ever want to do a more in-depth about a particular topic, I know that we very much had a roundtable discussion here. I'd be more than happy to come back on and get more into detail about certain things.
Yeah, I kind of hit with a lot of questions there, but I mean, I love it when I have a guest on that you did this.
Sure. Like, yep. So I tell everybody, I wear all the hats.
You know, not when I seen, you know, all the stuff you were involved with, I dug in a little deeper, like, wow, this is going to be interesting. And it was.
Yeah. It's got, you know what? This episode's got something for everybody. That's for sure.
People that want to hear UFOs, ghosts, Mothman.
Sure.
I got to do more on Bigfoot, though. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, before I get off here, one last question.
Sure.
As you had said, everything could be connected somehow.
Sure.
I mean, do you think that UFOs and Bigfoot are connected?
Sure. So one of my favorite stories, you know, and of course, people ask me about the Bigfoot UFO connection. That's been a more kind of increasing in popularity as far as a theory goes. But one of my favorites, because it's so well documented and because of where it was found, comes from a report right out of Project Blue Book. It's dubbed the Presque Isle Incident. So Presque Isle is actually right there in Pennsylvania. It's a little peninsula. And back in the, I believe it was the 1950s or the 1960s. I don't know. I didn't prep for this one because I didn't know we would talk about it. But somewhere around that time, there were two couples. And I believe there were two couples or family or something that were driving around and they were having car trouble. While they were driving around, they also saw this light, this thing fall from the sky in the middle of the woods, right where they were parked. At that time, two police officers drove up and noticed that they were parked there. And they were like, oh, you guys are all right. And at first they said, yeah, we're okay. We're just having car troubles, whatever. And the police circled back a little bit later and they said, you're still here. Are you okay? And they said, well, yeah, we're okay. Except we just saw this weird ball of light fall out of the sky here. So the police officers get out of the vehicle. They go, well, let's go check it out together. The men in the group and then the police themselves go and check while the women stayed back in the car. Now, they didn't find whatever it was that fell from the sky. They had never found it. But while they were turning back, they hear the women are, just absolutely just screaming. They're honking the horn. I mean, they're really freaking out. And they're like, what is going on? So while they were away investigating this thing, the women were attacked by what they described as basically a Bigfoot. I mean, big, hairy, ape-like humanoid thing that was trying to break into the car, push the car over, and things like that. You know, it had just ran off as they were approaching. That was a very interesting tie. You know, that's probably, like I said, the most credible that I think is there. And of course, it was reported to Project Blue Book because of the light in the sky. You know, that was the only reason why it's in there. Other people make claims of like seeing Bigfoot carrying balls of light or just up and disappearing. Like I saw it and it was coming past this tree, except instead of going past the tree and walking, it just disappeared, you know, and things like that. I do have a theory. I theorize that I think that there is a flesh and blood creature. I think it's an animal, an undiscovered species, maybe a certain type of primitive people, whatever it is. I think that does exist. But I think that what people are describing in those instances isn't necessarily the same thing that we describe mm-hmm. walking around in our woods. I think what it is that these creatures, again, remember, third dimensional puny brains, they want us to know that we are seeing something that is really out there, but they know that they can't present themselves the way that they want to. So they do it in ways of presenting themselves like something like a Bigfoot. Well, if they think they saw a legend and they'll know that it was important, but they won't know exactly what it was. And so I think that they try to mimic these things that you know, we know of, make it wild, but not so wild that it's traumatizing to the brain.
Well, thank you for being on, and I do appreciate it.
No, absolutely.
Oh, and then we'll talk again once your documentary comes out, and then sure. We'll do an update on that.
Sure. No, that sounds good to me. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Ashers for being on the show. I know I jumped all over the place with you tonight. Ashers, I apologize for that, but I wanted to utilize all your experiences and your background And also check out Monster Radio on YouTube. All of Asher's links will be at the bottom of this podcast. Thank you, Ashley Hilt. I really, really appreciate your time. I'm your host, Al Cooley, host of Ghosts in the Valley. I will see you in 2 weeks with another great episode.